Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Tucson, University of Arizona, the Racetrack Industry Program Symposium on Racing. Good morning. I can't say that it's seasonable in Tucson, but it's great to be here anyway. A bright morning, but everybody arriving and very promptly noting that not exactly the kind of welcome weather-wise that you expect in Tucson. It's been cold. I have flat out not just cool, not like we were talking with Casey last week, but it's cold. That's all right though. We're indoors. It's not like being at the track having to weather the cool temperatures. It'll warm up and things will heat up here for the symposium that starts in earnest tonight and then tomorrow and Wednesday. And happy to be here for the third time in the last 4 years. Missed last year, but the annual gathering here is special for so many reasons. When you think about the students that work toward this all year long and those that are interested to get involved in the industry, and they put it all together. It's really admirable, and for them, it's the highlight of the school year. Even though it comes, in the first half of the year, but we'll talk to students as we do every year and meet. It's not just young people, of course. In recent years, Scott Little and Joe Longo, think of them that were involved in other industries. And they wanted to make a change. You hear the commercial about making a change and doing something that you love, and that's what motivates so many to come here and to either take a path toward the racetrack, toward the animal science side, toward virtually any aspect of the industry. And it's on display. It'll be discussed. Things of obviously a topical nature. And we'll hit those highlights as the 3 days unfold. First order of business, of course, some review from a weekend that was tumultuous and eventful on a lot of fronts. And that started quite quickly after we wrapped up on Friday, and things were put in motion, of course, for a couple different wagering opportunities, the carryovers, the Stronach 5 and the Naira Betts Pick 5 and that Pick 6 as well that eventually carried into Saturday. And then the hard news that bubble to the surface, and literally as we were wrapping up, the TOBA, Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association, American Graded State Committee, they released their 2019 changes, the upgrades and the downgrades and so forth. And there's always things to question and things to consider about the upgrades and the downgrades. Three grade ones added and six grade ones pushed to grade two status. We'll get into that and get through it. The news that certainly affects the conversation immediately this morning involved Rick Hammerly, and the news that later not long after we wrapped up, actually at noon, Rick dismissed from his role as vice president of racing at Santa Anita and as the racing secretary. And the upheavals and the tumultuousness of things involving the Stronach Group, they continue. And you know, think back to the conversation we had with Tim Ritvo at Santa Anita this spring and the challenge that Ritvo was handed to improve the long-term prospects at Santa Anita. How that and those prospects can be improved without Rick, I would question personally. But this falls into the same arena, really, as Georgianne Hale being pushed out in Maryland. It's hard to conceive that there's something better that can be crafted without people like Georgianne Hale and Rick Hamerly doing things that they've done their entire careers. Rick, we'll hear from probably later in the week, and talked to him a couple of different times between Friday and last night, and he appreciates everybody's really kind thoughts in his direction. He says, don't worry. He's about him. He said, it'll be fine. But he was typically kind of amusing because as we talked about it when he told me, he said, my entire life, I've never been fired from a job. He was like, I said, it's a very strange. And frankly, you know, over the 15 years that Rick's been in that position, there's been untold ups and downs. And you know, those that, you know, that listen to Rick weekly, you had to, you know, be able to recall, you know, the parade of management that has come and gone at Santa Anita. And I mean, the reality has been the difficulties in California in general weigh on the situation there. It's not a singular racetrack issue. It's a much bigger issue, as has been, you know, so heavily examined and discussed. So we'll be there. We'll be there Thursday, Friday, and we'll see. We'll see about getting a chance to hear from Tim as well, and how he expects to affect any whatever changes he has in mind. And season is weeks away, and that Rick was basically this weekend ready to, you know, finish the condition book. That was the first order of business. So Dan Edson, of course, is there and a seasoned racing office, but we'll see what is forthcoming in terms of management. But as we said the other day, and it's funny because Rick himself said when we talked about the situation involving the change from Michael Rona to Frank Miramonte, and Hammer, you know, he said, you know, these things happen. I mean, it's part of the job, and frankly, it's sort of like a football. In fact, Rick was funny yesterday. He said, "Well, I did see that the Green Bay job is open, so you can win a Super Bowl, and that only buys you so many years of comfort, but a long tenure at one venue like this for Rick. In fact, I can't. I'd have to sit down and really think about, I suppose, Ben Huffman, not even exactly sure when Ben started officially as racing secretary, but there just haven't, you know, there aren't a lot of racing office executives that have had that long of a tenure in one spot. So we'll talk to Rick later in the week. And, of course, we'll see how things unfold going forward. But obviously, with that news, really kind of the biggest of the non-racing stories over the weekend. Once the racing commenced, as always, things had all kinds of twists and turns. Outstanding Saturday at Aqueduct. And the two-year-olds, we'll talk, in fact, to both two-year-old conditioners in this hour. Butchie Reed! And that potential Reed brother double that we talked about last week. Mark Reed last week and Butchie this week. Maximus Mischief in the Remsen, and really an impressive performance, as was the filly. The filly was terrific. Rudy Brissett sent out Positive Spirit. Got a very good ride from Manny Franco, who's just really elevated his game. So we'll talk to Rudy about his plans, how he's going to proceed. We'll look more at the race itself. The Maximus Mischief win. It really nice for Frankie Pennington to get involved with this kind of horse. Very cool. Very happy for him. Marley's Freedom, seemingly angling toward the distaff, the side of things. Baffert wanting to stretch out a little further with her. And that was a good race. The Gopher Juan was very good. And the highlight, the feature, a Cigar Mile, where there were a number of horses that might be involved in the pace and part of the front end, but it was hard to see how anyone was going to go wire to wire. And yet, Pattern Recognition, who went healthy and went right, you know, has been terrific. He got a terrific Jose Ortiz ride and wins the Cigar Mile. Got a nice fig too, 105. We got to talk about, you know, the timing scenario was kind of out of whack, of course, because of a gate placement blocking one of the beams. So timing was a little wacky. And the track absolutely sped up as the afternoon went on. I mean, that was, no matter with or without the internal fraction question, the track absolutely kept getting faster. There was a few things that went on. The rail was a little dead, it seemed. It helped you to be, you know, outside. Great weekend for Chad Brown, who Pattern Recognition for Seth Klarman and Bill Lawrence, and then sweeping the Hollywood Derby and the Matriarch. We'll look at more of the racing and a couple of the other news stories, including Mendelsohn. I guess it was a bridge too far, huh? Yeah, one too many transatlantics for him, retiring to Ashford. Back after this, we're in Tucson.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at expressbet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
This is a house that Jack built, y'all. Remember this house. This was the land that he worked by hand. It was the dream of an upright man. There was a room that was filled with love. It was a love that I was proud of.
We're back at the races. The weekend on Friday, well, I got to do this chronologically because there were so many different kind of tangential things, not just the results that were going on, including Johnny V, Hall of Famer John Velasquez, gets his 6,000th victory. And appropriately, it's funny. I mean, maybe it's just, I don't know, maybe I'm just imagining it, but it does seem that Johnny gets all of his landmark victories. It always seems like he gets them for Todd Pletcher, which is certainly appropriate. And this came on Friday, that off the turf race where Singapore Trader, to start actually the Naira Betts pick five carryover, and Singapore Trader off the turf, I think could have given a head start to the field and won. I mean a significant head start. And Singapore Trader ended up being, I thought, an easy single to start things. And the sequence, we'll get to the rest of it in a second. But terrific, just a terrific job by Johnny that continues to win. And, you know, it's interesting because he had been hinting a little bit. You know, you go back to that injury, to the incident that had him, you know, shelved, and it seemed, was that, how is that? It's got to be at least four years ago now, maybe more. And at that time, you know, the spleen and significant. And it felt like Johnny might kind of pull back a little bit, and he was tentative a little bit in his assignment. I think, and then after a certain period, he started to just take his normal amount of calls, and you know, I'm sure inspired by Stevens and and Smith. Don't know how long Johnny will choose to ride, but he's clearly got many more to come. And there, you know, there's the note. Velasquez won race, his 5,000th race aboard Galloping Giraffe for Pletcher. Kind of funny. Well, wish Johnny continued success. And since we're on a rider and Hall of Famer, Hall of Fame rider, bend, should mention that Victor Espinoza gave a very encouraging report to media. He got some positive. He's been getting lots of encouragement from his team of doctors, and is targeting a January return. Tremendous. That's great. He's been out since July 22nd. He said, I'm getting stronger by the day. And I guess at Scripps, they gave him an all clear on an MRI. And even Victor said he was a little surprised by, you know, by how quickly he's healed up. There's a great the story. I think Steve Anderson wrote it. There's a great picture. The Wilson brothers were at Del Mar on Saturday to hand out the Hollywood Derby trophy. Kind of cool. Owen and Luke. So there's your jockey news for the weekend. I mentioned the horse inference. You might have been able to tell we were hitting about Mendelsohn, and very admirable, absolutely, and it kept coming back, and good effort after good effort, including the probably his most courageous performance came in the Travers, of course, when only overhauled by Catholic Boy. But that was really a modest try. He was a little listless. And let's note also that very well, being down inside seemed like it was not the place to be at all at Aqueduct Friday and Saturday. Of course, they canceled yesterday because of fog. There were a couple of weather-related cancellations. Hawthorne's had trouble in terms of the track freezing and moisture and then rapidly thawing, and so they canceled on Saturday, making the maintenance crew work overtime to get the track together. But Mendelsohn still, even if that wasn't the best place to be, it was really a meek effort. And after the fifth in the Breeders' Cup and the third in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, he'll head to Ashford and stand stud. And of course, as Son of Scat Daddy, that you could only guess what might be if Scat Daddy, as we said, regarding Justify, if Scat Daddy had not died suddenly and prematurely. I mean, there's no guarantee, of course, that Justify would have stayed on and come back as a four-year-old, but maybe Mendelsohn would have, perhaps, who knows. The Scat Daddy equation, and of course, Mendelsohn, part of a family being out of Leslie's Lady, that is just wildly successful. So Mendelsohn goes to stud, and there had been some hope or thought that he might continue on to Pegasus, but before stud career, but not to be. So we'll talk more about Mendelsohn probably with Sid Fernando to get to the some of those racing results, particularly from Friday, and the two opportunities at both Aqueduct with the pick five and with the action at Laurel and Golden Gate as I reach for the those results. It will start with the Stronach 5, 88,000 going in, and things were playing out, you know, pretty straightforwardly. That home run maker from my end part talked about being a single, played him as a single. That worked, paid 620. It was interesting that Ghoul's Night Out really took money. I was stunned, actually, at how much down to 3-5 that Ghoul's Night Out took. And then, you know, same thing, one well. So, you know, if you had a narrow ticket, you were in good shape early. Then there was a strange wagering, not anomaly, but there was some quirky toad action that if you were following this closely on Friday, I'm sure you saw. And that was that when the wagering opened on the third leg, which was the Golden Gate second, there was all kinds of money had come in on Aram Bear, who had been away since last summer. And that's always a little unsettling. You're thinking, you know, Washington bred, why, what, you know, the workouts were okay. There was something something really odd about how much money that Aram Bear took. And I at first I thought, I kind of glossed over the horse and, you know, off of that kind of a layoff, and he was facing off against a couple of horses. I used two in there, Hank the Tank and Christo Sky. And I thought, I guess this is a local steamer. And the horse broke last and never lifted a hoof. Ended up floating up to be third choice at 9-2. But, right? Weren't you, for those of you that played the Stronach 5, you had to be. I'll talk to Johnny, I'm sure, we'll address it too. Then came the third, was that the third leg? Yeah, the fourth leg, back to Laurel for the 10th. And there were a handful of horses, the four or five of them that felt like they were possible, and you ended up with the 2-1 favorite, $6 Tri Poker from Tim Keefe. Hank the Tank actually gave a nice little boost. You know, if you were making it through, you got 1360. I thought they were pretty equal, Hank the Tank and Christo Sky. So, you know, if you viewed them equally, you ended up with a better mutual. And then came the nightcap. And when Premium Forest upset this, and make no mistake, this Greg James Calbred absolutely won well and paid $35. And it really obviously gave a good kick to the result. It ends up paying $4,777, which was, a good return, given, you know, the shorter prices earlier in the card. So congrats to everybody that may have hit. 69 players, 69 different tickets caught the $4,700. And, you know, at first I thought, boy, that's a tough horse. But then when you go back and look again, you go back, you know, Premium Forest had been running on the grass quite a bit. And if you go back to the synthetic race at Golden Gate, the starter allowance, and you see that performance, you realize, you know what, him getting back on the synthetic was the angle. And that race that he ran absolutely fit with the logical horses. So, that was, some people thought that, oh, that's an impossible. I missed him. I didn't see it until going back. So I commiserate if you got beat in the last leg. Same thing sort of happened in New York, too, because you had some horses that, you know, you had the easy start, in fact, 4-5 on Singapore Trader. That was actually a generous 4-5, because he was a Mortal Lock off the turf. Cadence Courage, you had the Maiden Special Group and the Rudy Rod for Sunrise Stable. Homebred of theirs, Frost Giant Colt, and ended up romping at 5-1. So that, but you know, there was maybe three. I think I used three in there, and you know, Cadence Courage certainly, you know, one of the ones. The how about the daughter of Catboat? You know, we talked about the It's Tricky tie-in and everything, and Stoner side, and Face It, she was a really good winner, and she got bet. She got bet down to even money, paid 4-10. The horse that was tricky in here was Final Frontier. I didn't think that was a tough horse. And Final Frontier was a turf turnback. And how much have we talked about that? They just never seem to work. Tom Albertrani and Godolphin, a Ghost Zapper colt out of the Seeking the Gold mare, Sahara Gold, and Final Frontier. I was shaking my head, and then of course, you know, the nightcap was formful, and that was another one that got away. So here we were Friday with the two big pick five opportunities, and put a nice run at it, but they ended up getting away. The final on the pick five was $1,402 if you managed to get it. But then we, you know what, we got it back on Saturday and then some, right? Let's talk about Saturday with Butch Reed. He's going to join us first. And then Rudy Brissett, Johnny D, and much more. Kenny Kirchner, who, of course, you know for many years. Kenny, instrumental in the creation of the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, and one of the architects of the entire contest landscape. Kenny is in town in his new capacity with Sport Tech. And Ken, I give Ken credit. He tried to retire. then he got dragged back in. And he's working with Sport Tech, and saw him last night. And absolutely, we'll sit down with Kenny Kirchner in hour three later. We'll talk about his current efforts. There's a sports betting tie-in. There's going to be a lot of sports betting conversation. Obviously, it continues to be just a dominant, important topic. And, you know, how the industry needs to respond appropriately. I'm doing one, doing a moderation of one of the panels on Wednesday about, you know, the core business, and more than anything, I mean, the industry has to take care of its existing player base first and foremost. There's no job two. So we'll talk to Kenny about what he's up to. Always good to see him. Always upbeat, smiling. Back after this, Butchie Reed joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California Thoroughbred racing action is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. First post is at 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific time. On Saturday, December 8th, don't miss a doubleheader of stakes racing action with the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity and the Grade 1 Starlet for two-year-old fillies. Bob Baffert will go after his fifth straight win in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity, while past Starlet winners include champions Take Charge Brandy and Abel Tasman. All the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Plus, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick 4's return. The wager has been well received and the pool's figured to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional Pick 6 wager. And don't miss our live money handicapping contest on Saturday, December 8th. You could win a seat to the 2019 NHC. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. We're back to Tucson, Arizona, University of Arizona, Racetrack Industry Program, and the Global Symposium on Racing. Looking forward to seeing everybody, participants, and discussions. We'll bring people through and talk about the topics of the day, the topic of the weekend, the two-year-old scene, and clearly a major player as we look toward the two-year-olds turning three, Maximus Mischief, who came in with the obvious target on the back, with a couple of big performances, moving toward this grade two opportunity. And we hinted at it last week when we talked to Butch's brother, Mark. It is a real pleasure to congratulate Butch Reed and the Cash's King team on the win with Maximus Mischief. Butch, congratulations!
Well, thanks a lot. It means a lot coming from you guys. Yeah, it was a real good weekend.
Butch, you know, you've known what you've had, and there's been plenty of murmurs. Dick Girardi was advertising Maximus Mischief, calling him the best prospect out of the Philadelphia area, you know, since Smarty Jones. But you still have to come, and you still got to come into town and ship out and, you know, bring him and put him in the gate and face off against, you know, others. And some thoughts about preparation coming in and, you know, how you wanted to approach it on Saturday.
Yeah, we knew it was a big step up, you know, going from 7/8 of a mile to a mile and an eighth. But he had plenty of time. He had a full 6 weeks in between races, and he just trained beautifully for it. We trained him hard. And, you know, you're always a little worried about, are you doing too much or not enough? But, you know, we trained him hard, and he held his weight well. That was the amazing thing when I saw him in the paddock up at New York. You know, sometimes you're caught surprised the wrong way, but he looked healthy, and I had to get the valet to go get a bigger girth to get it on, and he held his weight really well. He's actually even put on weight with all that training we did with him, so that's a very good sign.
You mentioned the 7-furlong stretch out, 7-9. What portion of that gave you any pause, because all we're going to hear about between now and the spring is going to be that he's out of a song and a pair of mare. He can't go that far.
Yeah, we read all that, but I mean, the way that he had been training, you know, we know you got to trust your eyes and what you got in front of you, and he's got a good head on his shoulder. That's the one of the best thing about him. He relaxed, and even the other day, Frankie, you know, that was the thing I was concerned, because he really had never had horses around him. He had won his first pretty handily, Gate the Wire, and he had the horses inside him and outside him the other day, and Frankie said he was just twitching his ears, you know, waiting for the call, and he handled it very well. And that, to me, that's the secret of getting the route of ground, is not being worried about too much whatever else is going on. So, and he did it very well.
You also had, from a positioning standpoint, being in the six hole and some options as to how things were going to unfold. What were the expectations going in, and what did you and Frankie, you know, talk about in terms of strategy and approach?
Well, we had the one horse coming up from Florida off the 5/8 turf sprint down there, and I've been going, you know, halves and 44 and change, and Frankie and I just agreed that if he wanted to do that, you know, we weren't going to worry about him at all. And this horse is very good out of the gate, and in fact, you know, coming up to his debut, he wasn't a very good gate horse, so he kind of caught us by surprise his first couple starts. He really, for a big horse, he's light on his feet, and he really springs out of the gate well. So we figured it'd be forwardly placed, and it turned out just about like we had thought. A little surprised that horse outside of him was that close, the Danny Gargan's horse, but he wasn't worried about it, and he rated well, and wasn't worried about any of the competition, which is very good.
That portion, riding him like he's the best horse, and when he moved to the lead, and at that point, you know, you want to control the race from that point on. What did you see as they moved down the backstretch and toward the turn, and what were you watching for that you wanted to see, and what you did see?
Oh, well, he always been a horse that runs the turns very well. As I said, he's a very good athlete, and he runs the turns well. So I saw when he was in the, you know, a prominent position, I thought we'd be in good shape coming out of the turn. We were keeping an eye on Chad Brown's horse, of course. And when he kind of got clear, and he's magnificent at changing leads also. And when he turned for home and swapped leads, I thought I was feeling pretty good about it. And his ears were still pricked, so I thought we were in pretty good shape.
And really, Frankie didn't have to do, you know, much ask of him. I think gave him a tap, and he kind of spurted away, and you know, seemed to, you know, keep the task well. He got a little tired late. Eh? Did he kind of swap around in deep stretch?
Yeah, about 50 yards from the wire, he did switch leads an extra time. Now, Richie Migliore, who's a very good and keen observer up there in New York, told me he thought he was kind of cocking a tire track in front of him. But, I mean, right away I thought, well, he's getting a little tired. But, you know, that was the plan. The idea was to make sure we get a lot out of this race. And, you know, and he had never really actually felt the whip before in his career. So that Frankie gave him a couple of taps and he didn't really overreact was another thing that we really liked about the race.
Absolutely. Through the wire, and then cooling out and back home, some postscript, some thoughts, and how do you approach the rest of the winter and a late campaign? I did see that, you know, you're kind of thinking of keeping him fairly light after the first of the year.
Absolutely. Yeah, the idea is we're going to take our shot, and if he follows the steps, you know, we're just going to have a couple of races for him probably. Depending on how he'll tell us what he needs. We want to keep him nice and fresh, and we're working on the plans as we speak to get him down to Florida and get him a chance to get acclimated to the weather down there and settle in. So probably won't run again for a couple of months or so, but we haven't really picked out the specific spots just yet. But right now, the idea is get him down there, keep him as fresh as we can, and I think we're a little bit ahead of the curve with that mile and an eighth race. That was one of the things I liked about that. So we've got the two turn, and we've been a mile and an eighth, which is a lot of the 2-year-olds haven't gotten the opportunity to do just yet. So You know, and he came out of the race very well. A little tired the next morning, but this morning he was very chipper and bouncing around. He's a handful of a big, strong colt, so you got to keep a close eye on him. But so far, so good on how he came out of the race.
A couple of notes before we talk about the team and about acquisition and so forth. Frankie Pennington, I one of the nicest parts of this, Butch, is Frankie getting this kind of exposure and this kind of horse.
Yeah, Frankie's, I mean, he's just a great kid, and he's so excited to be part of this, and I'm excited for him to be able to be part of it. And he's, just a good guy, and we've had a lot of success down here over the years, and Frankie's, been a top rider here for years now, and it's good to see him get an opportunity, and he's really, I've never seen him more excited than when he came off the horse after the race the other day. So it's great for Frankie, and he's a great guy. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy, so I'm very happy for him.
Well, and the chance to come out from Philly, and we talk to Tony Black every week, and it's not as if Frankie Pennington hasn't had graded stake winners. I mean, he's had a handful of wins, and they haven't all left town. He's won he's won in Maryland and New York. I mean, he goes where the opportunities take him, but this is a little bit of the next level. There's also got to be, Butch, for you, as I said to Mark last week, there has to be some real satisfaction for you to have a horse be in this position, particularly knowing that that there's been a couple that have been kind of sold out from under and so forth. So this has got to be for you really special.
Oh, absolutely. We had it out a couple of times, but, to have owners like Chuck Zackney and Glenn Bennett, who just really good guys and have really supported me over the years, supported my program for my wife, Ginny, and I, and it's a real, real exciting and a real pleasure to, be able to see those guys. And Glenn Bennett's father, Coach Bennett, was just so excited the other day that it was just great to be able to be part of that and see how excited those guys are, and certainly I was certainly excited too. So it was a very good day, and there's something about a 2-year-old colt. Like you said, with Frankie, he's won plenty of stakes, and I've won a few stakes here and there. But there's this is the glamour division. The 2-year-old colts really get your blood pumping. So it's really exciting.
This is a horse that has gone through the ring a whole bunch of times, and I don't know if that maybe even contributes to his polish and, as you said, kind of professional and good mind and those kinds of things. But had a couple of RNA experiences as a yearling, and originally had sold as a weanling, then ultimately Chuck Zackney signed the ticket at Timonium. Give us a little portion of that, the acquisition.
Chuck's son Alex, who was the first one to kind of lay eyes on him. We were wandering around looking at different horses, and we were looking at actually another filly from the Gary Frommer consignment there, and Chuck said, Alex grabbed his dad and eyes, and hey, you got to come over and see this colt. And we went over and looked at him, and he was a big strong colt down there, and liked everything about him. And he did have some shin problems at the previous sale. I think he was pulled out of the Gulfstream Park sale, the early one, and he had his shins been fired. And I don't know if that backed some people up or not, but certainly didn't bother Chuck and I. So we went right on with him and went after him aggressively. And as far as I don't how much that helps in the way he acts, but I was really his first 2 starts. He was a handful in the paddock right here at home. So I wasn't sure how he was going to act up there at Aqueduct, which is kind of a foreboding place down there in the pit of where the paddock
right.
is. But he was a complete confidence free race. I mean, he never moved a muscle. And he looked at me like, hey, boss, don't worry about it. I got this under control. And he certainly did.
Well, looking ahead, and I touched on the song and the prayer, song and a prayer mare equation a little bit, Butch, but I would have to think that your experience with a fleet again And, you know, winning a race like the Breeders' Cup Marathon a handful of years ago, what is your personal approach and philosophy on the distance equation and, you know, judging a horse and, you know, whether it's their wind or whether it's their action and, you know, being able to, you know, keep gearing him toward an assignment like a 10 furlong classic trip?
Well, more than any of that other stuff, it's their head. You know, it's how, where you have them mentally, will they? I mean, with the Fleet Again, it was easy because he was a big, quiet horse. He never, I mean, you could set dynamite off underneath him and he wouldn't even flinch. It's where they are mentally, and it's big, long, strong gallops in the morning. And as I said with this horse, I could not have trained him any harder. I mean, he goes a mile and three quarters every morning and kind of blows out a little bit through the lane on the end of it almost every day. And the fact that he handled, you know, he actually put on weight during all this is a very, very good sign. So, I mean, you know, you're limited in how hard you can push them physically because of racetracks and the various things. But, you know, it's all about where they are mentally. And where I saw pre-race the other day is, made me really think that mentally he is, you know, right where I want him to be. And that's the thing that we'll keep in mind as we move forward and the races stretch out even a little bit further.
Well, Butch, this is a pretty exciting development and a horse that instantly puts himself right in the picture with the names that are already established and excited for you. And, you know, in the meanwhile, Mark got himself a 2-year-old filly to go forward with too. So the Reed brothers on parallel tracks and delighted for you.
Yeah, now his filly must really be good to be able to overcome his training. So she must be a special filly. I've never really seen her yet, but to overcome him is a really good sign for that filly.
We had a lot of fun last week, and that was a visit that was, I don't know, 20-plus years in the making, because I was as big a Mr. Nickerson fan as anybody. And it's funny how, you know, people try to retire, and all of a sudden they got 30 horses again.
Yeah. Well, he's a good showman, that's for sure. And you knew it wasn't going to be long ago. His barn was filled back up, and he's a good trainer and does a heck of a job with the horses. So, you know, it was only a matter of time before he was filling back up and getting his name on the radio and all that kind of stuff. So,
I love it. Butch, I love it. Congratulations. You, Ginny, and the LC team, and Chuck Zackney, and the Cash is King bunch, Frankie, and really, it's going to be one of the fun stories into the winter and into the spring.
Well, thanks, Steve. Yeah, we're really looking forward to it, and thanks for having me on. And it's going to be an exciting time, so we're really looking forward to it.
Now, safe trips down to Florida, and best wishes for the holidays to Mark, Ginny, and Butchie Reed, and the Maximus Mischief Trail toward the winter and toward the classics, and already Banks Points winning the Remsen and in good hands with Butch Reed. Let's take a break here. We'll come back and do the 2-year-old side of things on the fillies with the Demoiselle winner, Rudy Brissett. And of course, Brissett establishing himself and coming off a strong year and has a filly with upside. Talk about their performance, and that came early on the card. Don't worry too much about the time, the 5-second difference between the girls and the boys on Saturday, but positive spirit couldn't have looked any better. Neither of these two. I mean, both these winners couldn't have looked better. Rudy Brissett joins us. He was out in California, actually. So we'll talk to him from there before he heads back east. We're in Tucson where the symposium starts a couple of things today, including the NHC team from the NTRA. Michelle Ravencraft. Saw Michelle yesterday, and Keith Shamblin, and they've got a session this afternoon. And we got to get the results from Saturday's free play. Let's see who qualified. Rudy Brissett joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California Thoroughbred racing action is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. First post is at 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific Time. On Saturday, December 8th, don't miss a doubleheader of stakes racing action with the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity and the Grade 1 Starlet for two-year-old fillies. Bob Baffert will go after his fifth straight win in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity, while past Starlet winners include champions Take Charge Brandy and Abel Tasman. All the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Plus, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick 4 is returned. The wager has been well received and the pool's figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional Pick 6 wager. And don't miss our live money handicapping contest on Saturday, December 8th. You could win a seat to the 2019 NHC. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.